Chapter 129. A castle in the air, manifold are the cares of wealth and state. Mr. Dorrit's satisfaction in remembering that it had not been necessary for him to announce himself to Clennam and Company, or to make an allusion to his having had any knowledge of the intrusive person of that name, had been damped overnight, while it was still fresh, by a debate that arose within him, whether or no he should take the Marshalsea in his way back, and look at the old gate. He had decided not to do so, and had astonished the coachman by being very fierce with him for proposing to go over London Bridge and recross the river by Waterloo Bridge, a course which would have taken him almost within sight of his old quarters. Still, for all that, the question had raised a conflict in his breast, and, for some odd reason or no reason, he was vaguely dissatisfied. Even at the Myrtle dinner table next day, he was so out of sorts about it that he continued at intervals to turn it over and over in a manner frightfully inconsistent with the good society surrounding him. It made him odd to think what the chief butler's opinion of him would have been if that illustrious personage could have plumbed with that heavy eye of his the stream of his meditations. The farewell banquet was of a gorgeous nature, and wound up his visit in a most brilliant manner. Fanny combined with the attractions of her youth and beauty a certain weight of self-sustainment, as if she had been married 20 years. He felt that he could leave her with a quiet mind, to tread the paths of distinction, and wished but without abatement of patronage, and without prejudice to the retiring virtues of his favorite child, that he had such another daughter. "My dear," apostrophe he told her at parting, "our family looks to you to assert its dignity and maintain its importance. I know you will never disappoint it." Apostrophe, "No, Papa," apostrophe said Fanny, "you may rely upon that, I think. My best love to dearest Amy, and I will write to her very soon." Apostrophe, "Shall I convey any message to anybody else?" Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Mr. Dorrit, in an insinuating manner. "Papa," apostrophe said Fanny, before whom Mrs. General instantly loomed, "no, I thank you. You are very kind, Pa, but I must beg to be excused. There is no other message to send. I thank you, dear Papa, that it would be at all agreeable to you to take." Apostrophe, they parted in an outer drawing room, where only Mr. Sparkler waited on his lady, and dutifully bided his time for shaking hands. When Mr. Sparkler was admitted to this closing audience, Mr. Myrtle came creeping in with not much more appearance of arms in his sleeves than if he had been the twin brother of Miss Biffin, and insisted on escorting Mr. Dorrit downstairs. All Mr. Dorrit's protestations being in vain, he enjoyed the honor of being accompanied to the hall door by this distinguished man, who, as Mr. Dorrit told him in shaking hands on the step, had really overwhelmed him with attentions and services during this memorable visit. Thus they parted, Mr. Dorrit entering his carriage with a swelling breast, not at all sorry that his courier, who had come to take leave in the lower regions, should have an opportunity of beholding the grandeur of his departure. The aforesaid grandeur was yet full upon Mr. Dorrit when he alighted at his hotel. Helped out by the courier and some half dozen of the hotel servants, he was passing through the hall with a serene magnificence, when lo! A sight presented itself that struck him dumb and motionless. John Chivery, in his best clothes, with his tall hat under his arm, his ivory-handled cane genteelly embarrassing his deportment, and a bundle of cigars in his hand. "Now, young man," apostrophe said the porter, "this is the gentleman. This young man has persisted in waiting, sir, saying you would be glad to see him." Apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit glared on the young man, choked, and said, in the mildest of tones, "Ah, young John. It is young John, I think, is it not?" Apostrophe, "Yes, sir," apostrophe returned young John. "I thought it was young John." Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Dorrit. "The young man may come up," apostrophe turning to the attendants, as he passed on. "Oh yes, he may come up. Let young John follow. I will speak to him above." Apostrophe, young John followed, smiling and much gratified. Mr. Dorrit's rooms were reached. Candles were lighted. The attendants withdrew. Now, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Dorrit, turning round upon him, and seizing him by the collar, when they were safely alone. What do you mean by this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the amazement and horror depicted in the unfortunate John's face, for he had rather expected to be embraced next, were of that powerfully expressive nature, that Mr. Dorrit withdrew his hand and merely glared at him. How dare you do this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit. How do you presume to come here? How dare you insult me? Apostrophe, I insult you, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried young John. Oh! Apostrophe, yes, sir, apostrophe, returned Mr. Dorrit. Insult me. Your coming here is an affront, an impertinence, an audacity. You are not wanted here. Who sent you here? What the devil do you do here? Apostrophe, I thought, sir, apostrophe, said young John, with as pale and shocked a face as ever had been turned to Mr. Dorrit's in his life, even in his college life. I thought, sir, you mightn't object to have the goodness to accept a bundle, apostrophe, damn your bundle, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Dorrit, in irrepressible rage. I don't smoke. Apostrophe, I humbly beg your pardon, sir. You used to. Apostrophe, tell me that again, apostrophe, cried Mr. Dorrit, quite beside himself, and I'll take the poker to you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, John Shivery back to the door. Stop, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Dorrit. Stop. Sit down. Confound you, sit down. Apostrophe, apostrophe, John Shivery dropped into the chair nearest the door, and Mr. Dorrit walked up and down the room, rapidly at first, then, more slowly. Once, he went to the window, and stood there with his forehead against the glass. All of a sudden, he turned and said, "What else did you come for, sir?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, nothing else in the world, sir. Oh dear me. Only to say, sir, that I hoped you was well, and only to ask if Miss Amy was well? Apostrophe, apostrophe, what's that to you, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted Mr. Dorrit. It's nothing to me, sir, by rights. I never thought of lessening the distance betwixt us, I am sure. I know it's a liberty, sir, but I never thought you'd have taken it ill. Upon my word and honor, sir, apostrophe, said young John, with emotion, in my poor way, I am too proud to have come, I assure you, if I had thought so. Apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit was ashamed. He went back to the window, and leaned his forehead against the glass for some time. When he turned, he had his handkerchief in his hand, and he had been wiping his eyes with it, and he looked tired and ill. Young John, I am very sorry to have been hasty with you, but some remembrances are not happy remembrances, and you shouldn't have come. Apostrophe, I feel that now, sir, apostrophe, returned John Shivery, but I didn't before, and heaven knows I meant no harm, sir. Apostrophe, no. No, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit. I am sure of that. Ha! Give me your hand, young John, give me your hand. Apostrophe, young John gave it, but Mr. Dorrit had driven his heart out of it, and nothing could change his face now, from its white, shocked look. There. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, slowly shaking hands with him. Sit down again, young John. Apostrophe, thank you, sir, but I'd rather stand. Apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit sat down instead. After painfully holding his head a little while, he turned it to his visitor, and said, with an effort to be easy, "And how is your father, young John? How are they all, young John?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, thank you, sir, they're all pretty well, sir. They're not anyways complaining. Apostrophe, you are in your old business, I see, John. Apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, with a glance at the offending bundle he had anathematized. Partly, sir. I am in my John hesitated a little father's business likewise. Apostrophe, oh indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit. Do you go upon the apostrophe lock, sir?
Yes, sir.
Apostrophe, much to do, John. Apostrophe, apostrophe,
yes, sir.
We're pretty heavy at present. I don't know how it is, but we generally are pretty heavy. Apostrophe, at this time of the year, young John. Apostrophe, apostrophe, mostly at all times of the year, sir.
I don't know the time, that makes much difference to us.
I wish you good night, sir. Apostrophe, stay a moment, John, stay a moment. Leave me the cigars, John, beg. Apostrophe, certainly, sir. Apostrophe, John put them, with a trembling hand, on the table. Stay a moment, young John, stay another moment. It would be a high gratification to me to send a little testimonial, by such a trusty messenger, to be divided among them according to their wants. Would you object to take it, John? Apostrophe, apostrophe, not in any ways, sir. There's many of them, I'm sure, that would be the better for it. Apostrophe, thank you, John. I'll write it, John. Apostrophe, his hand shook, so that he was a long time writing it, and wrote it in a tremulous scrawl at last. It was a check for £100. He folded it up, put it in young John's hand, and pressed the hand in his. I hope you'll overlook what has passed, John. Apostrophe, don't speak of it, sir, on any accounts. I don't in any ways bear malice, I'm sure. Apostrophe, but nothing, while John was there, could change John's face to its natural color and expression, or restore John's natural manner. And, John, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, giving his hand a final pressure, and releasing it, I hope we agree, that we have spoken together in confidence, and that you will abstain, in going out, from saying anything to anyone, that might suggest that once I assure you, sir, apostrophe, returned John Chivery, in my poor humble way, sir, I'm too proud and honorable to do it, sir. Apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit was not too proud and honorable to listen at the door, that he might ascertain for himself, whether John really went straight out, or lingered to have any talk with anyone. There was no doubt, that he went direct out at the door, and away down the street with a quick step. After remaining alone for an hour, Mr. Dorrit rang for the courier, who found him with his chair on the hearth rug, sitting with his back towards him, and his face to the fire. You can take that bundle of cigars, to smoke on the journey, if you like, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, with a careless wave of his hand. Ha, brought by little offering from a son of old tenant of mine. Apostrophe, next morning son saw Mr. Dorrit's equipage upon the Dover Road, where every red-jacketed postillion was the sign of a cruel house, established for the unmerciful plundering of travelers. The whole business of the human race, between London and Dover, being spoliation, Mr. Dorrit was waylaid at Dartford, pillaged at Gravesend, rifled at Rochester, fleeced at Sittingbourne, and sacked at Canterbury. However, it being the courier's business to get him out of the hands of the banditti, the courier brought him off at every stage, and so the red jackets went gleaming merrily along the spring landscape, rising and falling to a regular measure, between Mr. Dorrit in his snug corner, and the next chalky rise in the mouldy highway. Another day's sun saw him at Calais, and having now got the channel between himself and John Chivery, he began to feel safe, and to find that the foreign air was lighter to breathe than the air of England. On again by the heavy French roads for Paris. Having now quite recovered his equanimity, Mr. Dorrit, in his snug corner, fell to castle building as he rode along. It was evident that he had a very large castle in hand. All day long he was running towers up, taking towers down, adding a wing here, putting on a battlement there, looking to the walls, strengthening the defenses, giving ornamental touches to the interior, making in all respects a superb castle of it.
His preoccupied face so clearly denoted the pursuit in which he was engaged, that every cripple at the post houses, not blind, who shoved his little battered tin box in at the carriage window for charity in the name of heaven, charity in the name of Our Lady, charity in the name of all the saints, knew as well what work he was at, as their countryman Lebrun could have known it himself, though he had made that English traveler the subject of a special physiognomical treatise. Arrived at Paris, and resting there 3 days, Mr. Dorrit strolled much about the streets alone, looking in at the shop windows, and particularly the jewelers' windows. Ultimately, he went into the most famous jeweler's, and said he wanted to buy a little gift for a lady. It was a charming little woman to whom he said it, a sprightly little woman, dressed in perfect taste, who came out of a green velvet bower to attend upon him, from posting up some dainty little books of account which one could hardly suppose to be ruled for the entry of any articles more commercial than kisses, at a dainty little shining desk which looked in itself like a sweetmeat. For example, then, said the little woman, what species of gift did Monsieur desire? A love gift? Mr. Dorrit smiled, and said, eh, well, perhaps. What did he know? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.